Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. When I step into a hotel room, the feeling is usually relief. A long flight is finally over. I can take off my shoes, maybe look out the window at a new city. What I am not thinking is, I'm ready to get the flu and spend the next 2 weeks in this hotel room being sick. But that would be a normal thought at the Hotel Influenza. That's the nickname for an unusual testing facility called the Extended Stay Research Unit. Run by St. Louis University, the Hotel Influenza is designed to give researchers a rare, controlled look at how viruses like the flu infect the human body. Now, unlike real hotels, the room rates are quite generous to the guests. The volunteer test subjects are paid up to $3,500 for at least 10 days. And to talk with us about why this hotel exists and why researchers depend on volunteers willing to get sick for science, I'm joined today by the study's principal investigator and the director of St. Louis University's Vaccine Center, Dr. Daniel Hoft. Dr. Hoft, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's talk first about the strain. The strain that volunteers will be infected with is the influenza A H3N2. Why is it that this strain has been selected?
For a number of reasons. H3N2 is one of the three types of viruses that are circulating around the world most years. It varies from one year to the next, but H1N1, H3N2, and the influenza B viruses are what we include in the vaccines because of their common circulation through populations. So we're trying to protect people from all three of those. Why the H3N2 for this specific study? H3N2 does mutate more rapidly than H1N1, at least drifting from year to year. The first study that we did in 2019, when we completed it, was done with the H1N1 virus. And it is difficult to get access to safe challenge viruses. So they have to be made in very controlled circumstances. They have to be tested early in making sure you know what the right dose is and that they're not going to cause any problems, first in animals and then in humans. Mm-hmm. So it is a lengthy process to get one that's ready for use. Mm-hmm. And for this particular study, we are getting the H3N2 virus from the National Institutes of Health, and they had generated this virus and have tested it early, first in human for safety, and dose-finding studies to know what's a safe dose to challenge people with. Mm-hmm.
So the challenge part of this, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Mm-hmm. Sure. We are giving the virus to volunteers. Why are we trying to actually infect people? For a number of reasons. First of all, it's hard in a field study to really know when people are getting infected. Mm-hmm. And for an immunologist, as such as myself, a vaccinologist trying to make vaccines, it's really important to know what's happening very early on after exposure to a virus, in this case, to know whether or not we can do something to enhance those responses early on to protect people from getting infected. When you're in a field study, like I said, you don't know when people are infected, and so you're following them after it's obvious that they have an infection. But you miss a lot of important days of the immune response responding to the virus that we need to learn about.
Yeah.
So to be able to do a study where we have a group of people all getting infected at one time, and then we can study them right before that and right after, we are more certain about what are the immune responses that occur in relationship to the infection. And then we can start studying which ones are important for protecting against that.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to 2019. We had noted that hotel influenza is a nickname. It's the informal name for the Extended Stay Research Unit. And this unit is located where there was at one time a real hotel?
Yes, at SLU, St. Louis University. Father Biondi, the president at the time, had set up a hotel for guests where they're coming to visit SLU. They can stay in our own hotel. That was abandoned for several years before we got interested in using it as a challenge center. Since no one was using it, we did talk with people and facilities and others at SLU and thought that this would be the best place for us to do that. It was empty, not being used. We needed to upgrade it for better control of the air so it wouldn't escape or cause other people to get infected that we didn't intend to get infected and study carefully.
Sure.
It just seemed like the best place for us to do it, and it did work very well in 2019 for our first H1N1 challenge study.
And the 2019 study, how many people participated in that, and what was expected of volunteers at that time the mm-hmm. same as what you will be doing this time around?
Similar. We had two cohorts of people coming into the unit. I think the first one we started small, and I think it was five or six volunteers came in all at one time. The second cohort came in with a larger group and more than double. And we brought them into the unit. And the first thing you do is make sure people are healthy. Mm. How do we do that? We follow them for 2 days first before we infect them. We test them both clinically, looking for symptoms of an infection that was incubating. We also do what's known as a 22-plex multiplex PCR that looks for evidence of any of 22 different potential pathogens for being in their nasopharynx and potentially going to cause an infection, because we want to know that the people we're studying are only getting the flu that we give them and not something else which would cloud, you know, the whole, make them, all the waters muddy.
Right.
We wouldn't really know how to interpret the results that we're seeing. So 48 hours after we bring them into the unit, we testing them every day. If they remain healthy, and we don't see any evidence of an already incubating infection, then we go ahead and challenge them on the third day.
Mm-hmm.
We did lose some volunteers that were incubating not serious infections,
right.
but things like rhinovirus, which typically is a mild infection, and which they must have gotten out in the community and brought it into the unit.
Okay.
So it's an important part of knowing what you're doing to do that.
So one of the participants in 2019 told St. Louis Public Radio that her mother was not, quote, not jazzed about her getting sick on purpose as a, quote, lab rat. Is this more than just being a lab rat or a guinea pig?
Well, yes. I mean, the reasons that we really want to do these types of studies are more numerous, but I'll just mention a couple. And we've mentioned studying the early period after an infection, which is very important. What we haven't talked about is that we don't always know what are the important immune responses that we should target with new vaccines to do better than we are doing now. So I would call these kinds of studies more observational experimental biology-like studies, where we're trying to know what are the most important targets that we should try to induce with new vaccines.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to that, the challenge studies can be very important for the clinical development process of new vaccines or drugs. Any new vaccine or drug has to be going through numerous safety studies to make sure it's okay to proceed with. The Challenge Center can do is, and you still have to go through phase one through phase three of any new product to make sure it's safe. But when you have something that's only been tested in animals, for example, and then you're making the material in the right way, so-called GMP for good manufacturing practice, and then going into clinical trials, you're looking at, most of the time, unlike during COVID, 10, maybe a couple decades worth of time and hundreds of millions of dollars to go through phase one and phase three.
Mm-hmm.
If we did that with every possible vaccine, it's going to break the bank.
Right, right.
And there's a lot of new vaccines coming up that need to be tested. What you can do with the Challenge Center is right after the first human safety trial, making sure there's no major safety problems, you can go straight to the Challenge Center and do a vaccination and challenge study. If you do that, say with a new vaccine, and the vaccine shows no evidence that it can prevent infection or lower symptoms or lower virus load after the challenge, it's very unlikely that that vaccine would be found to be efficacious through phase one through phase three.
Mm-hmm.
So in that second small trial, just with a much smaller number of people, a couple dozen versus thousands, you can down select certain vaccines that probably are not really going to help the world.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing that, you don't waste time,
mm-hmm.
you don't waste money, and you can get more quickly to the products that are most likely going to help people.
Mm-hmm. For those who are listening and are feeling curious about not being a lab rat, but being a volunteer,
mm-hmm.
are there certain qualities that you are looking for in a group of volunteers for this kind of study?
Well, of course, we're most interested in bringing in people that are excited about the work, the science, the potential for doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of volunteers like that out in the community. And over the 33 years we've been a vaccine center at St. Louis University, I think currently we have somewhere around 18,000 names in our database.
Oh, wow.
Of people that have already said they're interested, mm-hmm. or already participated in vaccine trials. And so those are the people we go to first.
Mm-hmm.
We also do more broad public relations interactions like this.
Okay.
Particularly if it's important for how much time we have to recruit people,
mm-hmm.
And trying to make sure that we provide additional information that can make people understand why we're doing this and assure them that we're doing this in safe ways, which can obviously help with the whole process.
Is there a question that has come up that just struck you as very apropos and maybe even humorous, given, you know, all of the circumstances surrounding?
A question that was funny. Was
that
the question?
Uh-huh.
I can't really think of one right now beyond the types of things. In, I guess, 2019, we were hearing things like, yes, you can have a staycation at our Hotel Influenza.
Okay.
All you have to do is get the flu.
Right, right.
We had received through the internet, I think, well, the first kickoff a St. Louis Post-Dispatch story about hotel influenza got 90 million mentions within a week or two.
Oh, wow.
So it did get attention.
Okay.
That's for sure. I'm trying to think of other funny things. We received a video that was purported to have been made in, I believe it was Pakistan.
Okay.
Where they were talking about our challenge unit being a 5-star challenge unit with an Olympic-sized swimming pool, 5-star meals. That's not true, I'm sorry to say.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have capacity for exercise and things like that. So yes, it's been a journey.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about what the experience is. Don't go far. We will be back shortly. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
If you have a smart speaker, you have access to the entire world of NPR and St. Louis Public Radio. All the latest news and all the captivating stories. Activate our voices with yours by telling your smart speaker to play St. Louis Public Radio.
Let's return to our conversation with Dr. Dan Hoft. He's the director of St. Louis University's Vaccine Center and the principal investigator of a challenge study of the flu. Before the break, Dr. Hoft, we were talking about some of the things that participants would be, what they would be dealing with. And one of the things that we mentioned earlier on had to do with the amount of money that was being paid to volunteers to be part of this. How is it that you all reach what is, you know, fair compensation for being part of a study of this nature?
There's a lot of considerations that go into that. We don't want it to be overly high such that it becomes something that is coercive. But we do want to thank volunteers for the time that they're spending. And for this kind of study, where it's at least 10 days, where you really couldn't do anything else unless it's remote work, you can do that from the Challenge Center.
Oh, okay.
But it is 24/7 in the unit from the day we bring people in for making sure they don't have some other infection already ongoing through the end of the 10 days where we're following them up for at least 8 days after they get challenged. So it is a commitment, and it's compensation for time and trouble is the usual term that we've used. And when you're doing something like this where it's an inpatient stay, there's obviously an increased amount of time that you're compensating for.
What is daily life like for those who are participating? You mentioned the video from Pakistan. No Olympic-sized pool, but are there certain restrictions on what the test subjects can be doing?
They can't leave the unit unless we think they have to, say, go to the emergency room or something like that. We've had nothing like that happen in any of our studies so far, but we have to be prepared for that. The other things that they are restricted, they can't leave, they need to be in the unit. We do have separate rooms for them with their separate bathrooms so they have their privacy. We have internet, we have TV, there's a capacity to use your cell phones, and those sorts of things. And we even have an exercise room where we put some equipment up, like an elliptical machine and things like that, so people that need that to feel normal can still do that while they're in the unit.
What about dining?
Dining. We are providing all the meals. They are not being sent just to the isolated rooms. We do have a dining room where we have all the volunteers come out for meals if they want to. There's other areas where they can lounge in a large room where play cards or board games or watch TV, those sorts of things. And so we're not restricting social interactions with other volunteers or, you know, with any of the staff or physicians. Mm-hmm. But it needs to be controlled in the sense that we're not going to endanger people that are working there. They need to wear this specific hazmat-like suits to protect them from getting infected. Mm-hmm. The actual space is set up in a way that there's an airborne containment environment that prevents any virus that any of the volunteers have gotten from escaping from the unit and infecting other people in the building or outside in the community.
Mm-hmm. How many researchers are working on this study, Dr. Haupt?
Well, there's several. I'm the PI. I have several faculty in our group that are involved in this. I'd say Dr. Brett Jagger is my co-PI and has been helping and will be helping me more than others on this. Mm-hmm. He has a specific interest in this area. We have a large group of nurses, nurse managers, business types, regulatory individuals. So I never really counted it all up.
Sure.
But for this one study, it's probably at least a couple dozen.
Mm-hmm. Earlier in our conversation, Dr. Haupt, we talked about the debut, as it were, of the hotel influenza in 2018, and then there's a 2019 study. Mm-hmm. And there were supposed to be more of these studies, but COVID, of course, came on the scene. How did that change or interrupt the work that was underway?
It did interrupt the work in many ways. Our unit, not the Challenge Center, but our overall Center for Vaccine Development is funded by Vaccine Treatment Evaluation Unit Network funding from the National Institutes of Health. And what our unit of 10 sites around the country has become involved with since Y2K is protecting the U.S. public. We always did that more indirectly, though, developing vaccines that could be used. In the case of early 2000s, everyone was worried about a bioterrorism event. And so we became urgently involved in developing new vaccines, testing old vaccines for things like smallpox and anthrax, tularemia, things that were considered bioweapons, potential bioweapons. Since then, we've also been urgently diverted another 7 times, I think, for emergently studying new vaccines for the H1N1 2009 pandemic, for avian flu H5, H7, for Zika, for obviously COVID, and we're already on to another one. Mpox. But so this unit has been very important for being able to urgently deploy as a group to study new things needed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
That happened with COVID, obviously. It was the biggest one. It happened for about 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was right at the beginning of a new cycle of this VTEU funding. So we were thinking we were going to work out all the kinks in the new system, but Dr. Fauci came to our kickoff meeting, which happened to be in January of 2020, and said, sorry, you don't have time for that.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to build the plane while you're flying it. And because so much money was appropriated for COVID-19 to develop vaccines, you know, billions of dollars, it was the first time we were able to go through vaccine development so quickly, within a year, having vaccines at least under emergency use authorization to protect the U.S. public.
Yeah.
So because of that sort of money scheme where you have enough to do phase 1 through phase 3 in 1 year of up to 5 or 6 vaccines, it was thought that the challenge wasn't necessary to pick between the potential candidates, and the U.S. government was able to spend enough immediately to test important new ideas that thankfully worked.
Yeah. After going through COVID and quarantine, do you think people have been maybe more open to the idea of being involved in a challenge study like the one that you are undertaking?
I'd say it's probably mixed. Mm-hmm. I'd say that some people maybe became even more excited about the potential for doing good mm-hmm. with these studies. Others are just wondering why we're developing vaccines at all. So mm-hmm. it's a difficult time right now for needing to provide a lot more education about the important reasons we're developing vaccines, mm-hmm. how safe they are after all the testing that we're doing, how they save millions of lives every year. Just for COVID, we saved in the U.S. alone a million lives, it's estimated. Mm-hmm. So we need to do a better job of educating what we're doing. We do need to maintain safety first, and that is key for all of the type of clinical research that we do. I don't know that it's specifically the ones that are maybe less likely to be interested in vaccines right now. Without more education, we always have hope that we can educate.
Okay.
I think it's a mixed bag, mm-hmm. and it's a hard thing that requires a lot of people like me and mm-hmm. others getting out and talking about the importance mm-hmm. of doing this.
On that note of education, I mean, this is a complicated moment for public health in the United States, especially when it comes to vaccines. Today, U.S. Health and Human Services had Robert F. Kennedy Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced that the COVID-19 vaccine will no longer be among recommended vaccines for pregnant women and healthy children. What is it that you feel as a scientist who's working on viruses and vaccines, what is the advice or guidance that you have for people who are worried and who are seeking education in particular?
Mm-hmm. Well, keep asking the questions. We have to keep doing that ourselves. Those of us in the trenches trying to develop new vaccines need to be doing our best to educate our leaders, our new leaders in government, of their importance. And it's a hard thing to do, but it's something that we cannot stop. Mm-hmm. We have to move forward with working with our leaders, because we don't have others. I'd say specifically about the COVID vaccines recommendations that have come out in the last, week. First, the idea that is most important is that individuals with increased risks of severe disease, hospitalization, death, those people need to keep getting vaccinated because the virus is still here and mm-hmm. it's still mutating, and they need to have the best vaccine immunity they can get. Mm-hmm. Many other countries, however, including actually most, and led by the World Health Organization, has been saying for some time that that's really the main population to focus on. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., we like to do even more. And we have in the past. And the reason for other people that don't have risk factors would be, for example, to protect a loved one that they are close to. If they got infected, they're asymptomatic, they could spread it to that loved one that is at high risk mm-hmm. of severe disease, and that could be catastrophic. So it's complicated, but those are some of the ways I think about it.
Yeah. In our last minute, Dr. Haft, what is it that you hope you and your team of researchers, what do you hope to learn once you're done with this particular clinical trial?
This one particularly is set up for us to learn more about the virus. And is it affected by the immune responses that just people come in with from their various vaccinations and exposures in the past? Mm-hmm. We focus so far on the human and the immune response to the human. But in this case, we want to know more about the virus to help us develop mucosal vaccines that could not only protect against the worst forms of disease, but could protect against infection much more efficiently, mm-hmm. and potentially prevent spread to others more vulnerable, like mm-hmm. I already said.
Dr. Dan Hoft is the director of St. Louis University's Vaccine Center and the principal investigator of a flu study. Dr. Hoft, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And I should mention, there's still plenty of room at the Hotel Influenza. Interested participants should email the St. Louis University Center for Vaccine Development. The address there is vaccine@slu.edu.
This episode was produced by Danny Wisentowski.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.